This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. It is Wednesday, July 25th. Before we get started today, I want to remind you, please. It helps with exposure. It helps with the podcast. It helps more people find this and be able to get help. If you can go over to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, scroll down to the review section and write a review, leave a five-star review. If you like what it is that you hear, if you get some value out of it, I've gotten a lot of really great feedback recently from people on Instagram and on Facebook and you know, different social media, things like that, over this podcast. And it's actually a nice segue. So last Wednesday, the podcast with Dr. David Hanscom dropped. And since then, it's gotten hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of downloads. Really been pretty amazing. It's been shared on numerous social media accounts. Of course, my own, but the All the Rage social media account, Dr. David Hanscom social media account, his back in control page is on there. Really pretty awesome. I've gotten a lot of really good feedback from people, friends, and different text messages, things like that. So next week you're going to hear a really great interview from a world record holder in kettlebell sport. But this week we're going to do no guests. There's a few things that I want to talk about and kind of unpack in the discussion that I had with Dr. Hanscom. There was some criticism of the podcast, and I want to talk about that, some criticism of Dr. Hanscom that him and I kind of got into. And then I want to go into a little bit more depth and detail about the ACE study, which we talked about in the podcast, but some people listening to this may not be knowledgeable in what the podcast is. The first thing that I want to talk about, so Dr. Hanscom, if you didn't gather this from the show, he's released two books. So he wrote one in 2012 called Back in Control. Then he wrote a revised version of this same book in 2016, also called Back in Control. One's got a black cover, one's got a white cover. The stories are very, very different. In fact, I had asked a question. It was from a listener, Barb, who had asked, if you could change anything from when you wrote your book, what would you change? And he talks about, even since the time when the most recent book was released, which was in 2016, just how much has changed in the study of neuroscience and neuroplasticity since that copy has been released has really been pretty amazing. Now, a lot of this work around neuroplasticity is being done on the fMRI project that Alan Gordon, Christy Wiepe, and the Pain Psychology Center is doing in, I think, in Boulder, Colorado. And a lot of the results will start coming out in the next year. But it's interesting. As I've gotten really into this topic, and I share about this a lot on social media and on LinkedIn and things like that, you know, how much stress really kills. And, you know, Dr. Sarno's work is all about unconscious emotions being really the root cause. And while I agree with him, I'm definitely a big believer in the camp that Dr. Hanscom talks a lot about, which is more of the elevated cortisol levels, elevated adrenaline levels, things like that in the body. And when these are chronically elevated, you end up with health problems. And that could be anything from a bad back, bad neck, the physical symptoms that we know much more about, to things like IBS. And there's even been cases of in talks of MS. And there's a big belief out there that if you score high in the ACE study, which I'll get into in a couple of minutes, it may put you at a higher risk for things like cancer. So it's really pretty impactful. So Dr. Hanscom and I talked about the ACE study. So what the ACE study was, it was a study done between 1995 and 1997, and it analyzed children as well as follow-up studies that were done, asking a variety of questions. And essentially, if you scored a 7 or greater, you put yourself at higher risk for a lot of things. So follow me here. Here's the questions from the ACE study. So there's 10 questions on here. If you score higher than a 7, that's where essentially you become at much higher risk for having health problems or chronic bad health problems. You also have the risk of dying 20 years younger, a much higher risk. So the first question, did a parent or other adult in the household often swear at you, insult you, put you down, or humiliate you, or act in a way that made you afraid that you might be physically hurt? So if the answer is yes, then you write the number 1 down. It'd be great if you had a piece of paper or something that you could write with, but if you don't, you can just go home and Google this, the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study or the ACE study. Question number 2, did a parent or other adult in the household often push, grab, slap, or throw something at you, or ever hit you so hard that it made marks on you or you were injured? Question number 3, did an adult or person at least 5 years older than you ever touch or fondle you or have you touch their body in a sexual way or try to actually have oral, anal, or vaginal sex with you? Question number 4, did you often feel that no one in your family loved you or thought you were important or special or your family didn't look out for each other, feel close to each other, or support each other? Question number 5. Did you often feel that you didn't have enough to eat, had to wear dirty clothes, or had no one to protect you? Or your parents were too drunk or too high to take care of you or to take you to the doctor if you needed it? Question number 6. Were your parents ever separated or divorced? Question number 7. Was your mother or stepmother often pushed, grabbed, slapped, or had something thrown at her? Or sometimes or often kicked, bitten, hit with a fist, or hit with something hard? Or ever repeatedly hit over at least over the head or over at least a few times or threatened with a gun or a knife? Number 8. Did you live with anyone who was a problem drinker or alcoholic or who used street drugs? Number 9. Was a household member depressed or mentally ill, or did a household member attempt suicide? Number 10. Did a household member go to prison? So if you think about those 10 questions, and if you thought back on your life and the answer for you is yes, in several different ways of those, you are at a predisposition for multiple health problems throughout the rest of your life. And they start with social, emotional, and cognitive impairment. Adoption of high-risk behaviors could be including sex for money. It could be including drugs. It could be include drinking. It could be a variety of things. Disease, disability, and or social problems. And then early death. So all these things, and these are across the rest of your life. So if any of those things happen to you, or if at least 7 of those, and doesn't even have to be 7, but the higher the number, the worse, you're at a predisposition the rest of your life. The nice thing is that a lot of the research around this stuff is that if you seek help for this, if you seek counseling for it, you can talk to a psychotherapist that can speak to the ACE study, which many of them should be able to. A lot of this stuff is reversible. It's been said in studies, and it's been said throughout time, that even if you do suffer from high scores on the ACE study, if you do seek mental health for it, you can unpack a lot of these things, because it goes back to everything I've talked about on this podcast from the beginning. It's that we bottle in the emotions, and we repress them, and we suppress them, and they go deep into the levels of the subconscious. And Caitlin Michaels on her podcast, The Mind Body Mastery, which if you're not checking out that podcast, you really need to. But she talked recently about the body essentially being the subconscious part of the mind, which I couldn't agree with more. And I've thought more and more about this. If you think about it, and you go through a really, really stressful situation, and oh, your neck hurts. I did like a best of episode recently on the podcast where Rachel Novak is a friend of mine, and I interviewed her back last fall, and she had talked about working out or something, and her shoulder acts up or her knee acts up, and that she'll think, okay, like what's going on in my life that could have caused that? Like that's a perfect example of what we can all kind of get on board with, that we have physiological impact due to an emotional stimulus. And it's the same idea there. So, super interesting stuff. I think that the main thing is that, with our kids and with our children, like we just really have to be careful on what it is that we're doing, because all those questions in the ACE study, you know, you can easily cross those boundaries, right? If you do something and you go to jail, if your spouse does something and goes to jail, if you hit your kid at all, if you have a problem with drinking or alcohol or street drugs or anything like that, if you or somebody that's in the house tries to commit suicide, like all these things really put the kids at risk. And so Dr. Hanscom gave a few different words of wisdom, and one of which was, if you have a fight with your significant other, you take it outside. The kids don't want to feel the tension. They don't want to see the tension. And ultimately, like, you need to make the house or the home, this is the sacred place. Like, this is where the family is together. This is where we love each other. This is where we do hugs and kisses. Like I always tell Zoe and tell Audrey, but you know, she's a baby. But like, that's what it really is. That's what the home needs to be. It needs to be that solitude and that sacred place, because what you don't want happening. So dreams are very much interwoven to the subconscious mind, and you don't want your kids having dreams 10 years from now, or 5 years from now, or 1 year from now, or 6 months from now, or 20 years from now, or whenever it is, where they remember these bad incidents happening and they're rehappening in the place that they grew up. Like, that's where they keep having this imagery pop up. That would be the best reason that I would see to take it outside. So one of the other things that Dr. Hanscom talked about was what doesn't work for chronic pain. I was just texting with my friend Samantha. Samantha Love, shout out to you if you're listening to this. Her husband's going through some health issues right now, some back troubles. And there was talk of like an epidural happening. And Dr. Hanscom was very insistent. Again, this is a spine surgeon. This is a spine doctor who's telling everybody that's listening, Epidurals do not work for pain. Like they do not work for anything that's chronic, right? Somebody goes into labor, they get an epidural injection. It's going to help for the duration that person's in labor, right? They don't want to have them be in intense pain when that's going through. But same thing happens for chronic pain. Like if you come in, you've got a back injury or back hurts, you get an epidural injection, you feel good because you're numb for a few hours, but then it comes back and then what? Like, what do you do then? And the what do you do then is really the biggest part of all of this stuff. So, okay, let's get some of the other stuff that I was planning on talking about. Samantha had asked, what do we do about the pain or what can we do for the pain? So I was thinking about this. I've been making a list of these things, and one of the things I'm considering doing maybe coming out in the next couple of months. It might be something that I'm working on, but is some kind of a course that people can take, right? They can pay some kind of a fee. It would be a very, very, very minimal fee. Think about how much you've been paying doctors and such for a long, long time. But look, I found my way out of the abyss of chronic pain. I'm back weightlifting. In fact, this past Friday, I cleaned 271 pounds, which was the most I've ever done. I back squatted an all-time max of 337 pounds. I snatched 196 pounds. These were all things that I couldn't even do pre-TMS or pre-mind-body syndrome. Like when I was fully healthy before any of this stuff happened, I couldn't even come close to those numbers. And now I'm shattering those numbers, right? So like I've been where you are. If you're listening to this and you're in pain, I've been where you are. I've been to the bottom, right? Like I've seen 25 medical professionals about a variety of things. I've laid on the floor. I've cried, right? Like just in agony over this pain. I've missed so much work. And if there's any coworkers any former coworkers that are listening to this, in 2016 and 2017, it is amazing how much work I missed because I had to go see a doctor, or I had to go get an injection, or I had to travel to another state to get my neck operated on. There's so many instances of that. Like I've been the worst of the worst right where you're sitting right now if you're still in pain. And there's some people that I talk to pretty frequently on Instagram about this. One has fibromyalgia. One lives in Sweden. I'm not necessarily sure what her health problem is. But look, guys, I've been there and I have my life back in the best way possible now at this point. And not only do I have my life back in the best way possible, but I have it back in such a way where I'm much more mindful and I'm much more aware of who I am, my surroundings, my struggles as a human being, my struggles as a dad, my struggles as a husband, struggles as a professional just makes me much more aware of what kind of a person I am. And I think that that's what you need. So one thing that I'm considering working on is a course. How the fuck do I get out of this pain cycle, this pain abyss? And, you know, I've read so many different books now. Sarno's book, Sachs, Ozanich, Dr. Hanscom's book. Like all these people that I've talked to and consulted with over the last year. And I've kind of put together really like my best cocktail for a lot of these things. And some of those things include don't talk about your pain. That's a Dr. Hanscom ripoff, right? Like I put on some Facebook groups I'm a part of not too long ago. Hey guys, I have a challenge for you this weekend. Don't talk about your pain once. I feel like that's so big. When you take that awareness away and when you start to think in your mind about talking about my back hurts and you know, I used to do this with my mom all the time. I'd sit there and we'd just talk about all the things that hurt, right? Like I'm in my 30s, that shouldn't be the case. You talk about all the things that hurt and where's your awareness? It's on your body. It's on your pain. You know, it's on whatever health issue it is that you have. And you're feeding it the attention like a petulant child, which is, you know, you don't want to do that. Another thing I would say, engage in a social activity once per week at the minimum. If you've got kids, you've got a spouse, you've got to make this work. So it can't be with somebody in the family. Like you've got to go get a beer with somebody, a couple of buddies. You go outside, you interact with your neighbors for a long time. Like I do that all the time and it's so therapeutic. And I know that they listen to this and I appreciate you guys. And I think it's awesome that we can all sit in a driveway and just chat and our kids are, you know, they're running around, they're being nuts, right? Like we're just people, right? We're being social. I think it's so important for the brain and for development, not just as a child, but development as an adult. You know, go play golf with your buddies, go do something. It has to be with other people. Don't have it just be in the house. Like that's another thing that I would do. Hold yourself accountable to that. I would also prescribe 5 minutes of diaphragmatic breathing before you go to bed. Steve Ozanich had this in his second book where he talked about not doing any, he said forever, don't do anything conscious when it comes to wanting to solve your pain. And I agree with that in a way, but later on he added in breathing. That would be one thing that he would do, diaphragmatic breathing. You can find a lot of videos on this. I've actually done one. It's on YouTube. If you just type Eddie Knows Fitness, you'll be able to find it. But it's an instructional video on proper diaphragmatic breathing. You do that in the 5 minutes right before you go to sleep, like your teeth are brushed, you're in bed. You put one hand on your chest, one hand on your belly. You only want your belly to move in through the nose, out through the mouth. By every time that you breathe in, you're activating the sympathetic nervous system, which is fight or flight. And when you exhale through your mouth, it's the parasympathetic nervous system, which is rest and digest. And the more breathing out that you do, the better. That's why when I hear people say, take a deep breath, you're activating sympathetic nervous system. So really the phrase should be take a deep breath out, and that would be even better. You can rid yourself of a lot of toxic shit that's inside of your body way better than a juice cleanse or any of those other things that claim to take toxicity out of your body. Say no to something. So your boss asks you to do something. Somebody asks you to go and do something that really you don't have the time to do. It's going to aggravate you if you do it. Tell them no. What's the worst that could happen? Will you die? No, you won't die. So say no to something. I think that the power of no, if I were to write a book, it might be called The Power of No. But just having the ability to say no, because that limit, the fact that you don't want to do something, in all likelihood, that's like your intuition telling you, hey, I'm overwhelmed. I need to not do that. And it's okay to say no, by the way. And most bosses, from what I have found in my experience, are going to be accepting of that, because you don't want to be the person that's willing and accepting to do everything, because it will result in further problems down the road. Use the phrase, I need, at some point. Let me give you an example. My wife and I, we got a great relationship. I love my wife with the bottom of my heart. I wish that she listened to every podcast. She does not. Hopefully she listens to this one because it's shorter than the last one. So she was out of town a few days last week, and, you know, I had the girls by myself, and, you know, I'm working and I'm doing my max out cycle for weightlifting, right? And again, like, weightlifting is fun, but you're still putting stressors of all different kinds into one beaker of health, which I talked about in a previous episode. It's in the archives. Go back and find it. But I told her I need to get out and ride my motorcycle for several hours on Sunday. I just need to. And, you know, I love my wife so much. Like, she said, okay, that's cool. Like, there was no debate about it. It was, she's got the kids for a few hours and that's just how it is. And it's so liberating and so empowering to be able to tell your significant other, hey, I need to just check out for a few hours. I need to go do something else. So I went with my buddy Pete. We rode our motorcycles. If you're in the Seattle area, we drove our motorcycles up to Chuckanut Drive up in Bellingham. We were on the road for like 4 hours, 4.5, maybe 5 hours. It was amazing. There's nothing more therapeutic to me than riding my motorcycle for a long period of time. I came home. Everything was cool. You know, we all had dinner as a family. It was awesome. You know, I love my girls. When you get mad or upset about something, sit back and think, how does this make me feel? You don't have to know why does it make you feel that way, but how does this make me feel, and is it worth it to feel that way? Think about it. Like, something really makes you mad. Is it something that you really need to spend that much mental anguish and mental anxiety over? This has probably been the hardest thing for me to do over the last year, is to say, is it really worth it to have that much energy, that much negative energy spent on this thing, whatever that negative thing is? I've come a long way on these kinds of things, but it has felt so good to just rid yourself of that. In fact, it reminded me, Dr. Hanscom told this story of this woman who had been in chronic pain, wheelchair bound, on opioids, you know, painkillers, had come to see him, didn't want to do his program, you know, threw his book against the wall, that kind of thing, wanted nothing to do with it, wheelchair bound. This lady comes back 9 months later, walking into the office, no health problems, 100% cured, all her pain. He asked her what happened. She said, forgiveness. And then I asked Dr. Hanscom, forgiveness for who? And he said, for everybody, for everything, right? Like, the people that wrong you, the situations that wrong you, how long do you want to hold on to that? How long? And if the answer is a long time, and if that's still causing you anguish, the only person that's suffering from that is you. So keep that in mind. Okay. I'm going to finish off with, Okay, two more things. Because I don't think I brought this up earlier. If I did, tune out for 30 seconds. Dr. Hanscom talked about a study that was recently done in Sweden. 900,000 subjects, autoimmune disease, showed a definitive correlation between autoimmune disease and stress. And I got asked by a coworker a couple of hours ago, what can you do about stress? In my opinion, if you are cognizant of the fact that this stresses me out, oftentimes that should be enough. I don't think it's a bad idea to try and eliminate some of the stress from your life, meaning, and I'm going to get into this in a second, if your job stresses you out because you work 60 hours a week, it's time to probably cut back a little bit. Go find a hobby, right? Like take 5 or 10 hours out of that week and do something that you enjoy more, especially if you hate your job. That's one thing. If you love your job and you do it 60 hours a week, it probably doesn't really feel like a job, right? Like that's the difference, right? Like a lot of business owners, they really, really love what they do, and they may work a bazillion hours a week, and they really, 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 really love it. And so I don't know if they feel it quite like that. So that's something to consider. Okay, I'm going to close with something I posted on LinkedIn a little while ago. I'm on LinkedIn quite a bit for work and things like that, but I'm not shy about presenting my opinions, how I feel about different things on my LinkedIn page. And the risk in that is that if I have beliefs that I don't think align with other people's beliefs, it could be problematic and could cause me problems, right? So here's what I posted. I see a lot of people post on LinkedIn about the number of hours they work. They get up early, stay late. They sacrifice anything and everything for an extra hour or 20 of work they can capture in a week. Overworking is glamorized. I want to see some stories and hear from some people who are efficient enough to accomplish in 40 hours or fewer. The people with families, kids, gymnastics practices, doctor appointments, chores, hobbies, life, everything about life. After studying the effects of stress and how it is literally killing us, not even slowly in a lot of cases, over the last year, I really admire the people going the opposite way, bringing their lives to equilibrium so that they can enjoy life without chronic health problems for decades and decades to come. Though it would be taboo to admit to such a thing, perhaps, if someone raises their hand and says the things above are important enough to them to sacrifice some work time, I salute you. I can't put that any more strongly than I wrote it. That was in one pass. That was straight from the heart. That was everything in my fiber of being that I believe to be true about what stress can do to you. And unfortunately, I feel like the world's heading in an opposite direction. We're finding it much more acceptable to do the things that we don't want to do a lot. But at the same time, I have hope. The millennials, which I think I barely qualify as a millennial, we want to enjoy some of the finer things in life. The finer things in life doesn't have to be sipping expensive champagne and eating caviar and doing all that kind of stuff. It might just be as simple as, hey, you know what? I'm going to take one or two Fridays off a month and I'm going to go do something that I love. Could be surfing, could be painting, could be riding a motorcycle, could be hiking, could be whatever it is that you want. But making sure that you're getting away and getting some time for you is going to pay some incredible dividends. Thanks so much for listening to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I'll be back next week with another interview. Have a great week.